Today is Thursday, November 19th, 2020. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Keith and Nancy Green, G-R-E-E-N. My name is Tom Martin. This is part two interview. Good morning, Keith and Nancy. How are you today?
Good.
Good. Keith, we had left off the end of part one, where in the summer of 1972, you saw an advertisement for work at Grand Canyon as a dishwasher at the Bright Angel Lodge.
Well, not exactly. It was actually spring of 1972.
Okay.
I think it was May when I first got to the canyon. But
how did you get to the canyon?
Trailways bus.
Okay.
From Norman, Oklahoma to Flagstaff, and then Navajope Tours from Flagstaff. I spent the night in Flagstaff. It was actually, I was in a hotel, which is where City Hall is today.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was a hotel. It was right on the, where, well, it was called Santa Fe Boulevard then. Santa Fe turns and becomes Milton Road, goes under the bridge.
Yep.
And I remember standing there looking at it going, God, this is a big city.
Where did the bus drop you off? Where was the station?
The Trailways depot was right in that block, too.
Okay.
It was right in that block where they built City Hall.
Okay, where City Hall is today.
I think. Now, wait a minute. No, I think it's one block further east where the Trailway station. It's now a, God, is it still? It's a pawn shop now, I guess.
Yeah, there's a kind of a cavernous opening that kind of goes through a lot of that building there.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That was the Trailway bus station.
And then for many years, that was the depot for the Navajope tours.
That's true. It was that, too.
Okay. And I just want to clarify, by this time in 1972, were you legally blind?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I couldn't drive. I couldn't drive, so that's why I took the bus.
Okay. How did you manage? You're on your own. You're on a bus. You got to find a hotel. You got to get arranged transport. Was it just like super simple for you, or I mean, this was.
Well, you know, when you grow up blind, you need to ask questions. You can't be afraid to ask questions.
And okay.
So, yeah, when I got to the Trailway station, I went into the. There, I think there was only one booth there, you know, one salesperson, and I said, hey, where's the closest hotel?
Uh-huh.
You know, where can I stay? Well, first of all, I made sure to find out, you know, well, where do I have to be to catch this Navajope Tours and to Grand Canyon, and then also where can I stay, you know, and I mean, I could see well enough to tell a hotel when I saw one.
Okay.
And I just checked in there. And
did you have a white stick at the time, or were you still able to see well enough that you didn't need that?
I didn't have a white cane. No.
Okay. Okay.
No, I didn't get that until just recently, really.
Okay. So overnighted there in Flagstaff, and then the next day got on the Navajope, little van, I suppose?
No, it was a bus.
Okay.
It was a bus. It took us in right to the, right there in front of the Bright Angel Lodge.
All right. But you needed to get over to the personnel office. Did you know that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Of course. And so... I asked questions again. I can't remember exactly, but probably I went into the to the lodge and ask them at the front desk, you know, okay, I'm going to be working here. Where do I check in?
Okay.
And they pointed, you know, showed me the way. At the time, the personnel office was in the front office of the Fred Harvey General Office Building there on the, you know, on the turn of the road there.
Yeah, the GO, I guess, as it's called, right?
Right. That's where the personnel office was.
Right across the street from the White House.
Yeah.
The old superintendent's residence.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay. And so you would have had to walk back over there from the BA.
Suitcase.
With a suitcase, okay.
I had this big white suitcase, I remember that. It had a, one of those clock radios in it, you know, that is about a foot long. And
okay. Yeah. Packed full of stuff.
Yeah.
With no wheels, I suppose.
Oh, no, no wheels.
Right.
So, anyway, I took that down there and checked in. And it was funny because they had told me, see, I was a hippie in Norman, Oklahoma, and I had long hair. And when I, so when I got to, well, before I went, they said, you have to cut your hair. It has to be shoulder length, no more than shoulder length.
Okay.
And so I had it cut, you know, there in Norman, Oklahoma, down to shoulder length. And then I came in, and the personnel director had hair all the way down to the middle of his back. And I can't remember his name. I wish I could.
Oh.
He was a friend of Todd Grumke or something. It was all, you know, they were kind of two peas in a pod. But anyway, he was the personnel office. This guy was personnel.
How do you spell Todd's last name?
Todd?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Rhomkee, you think?
Okay.
No, that's not helpful.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. So
wait. It was he had this this cartoon, and he had it framed on the inside of the door of the personnel office.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little like 8x10 room.
Yep.
It was the personnel office for Fred Harvey. And the cartoon was this guy, this hippie guy, and he's got his shirt unbuttoned and he's got it pulled up so that his collar was about halfway down his back.
Okay.
And he said, "See, it's only down to my collar." That was the cartoon. Anyway, so he wasn't taking this haircut requirement that was coming from the National Fred Harvey Office seriously, and he actually was just about to quit. So, you know, I had to go find probably the L2R to where I could get a uniform and all that stuff, and went to work as a dishwasher.
So where did they put you for lodging?
Victor Hall.
Okay. What do you remember about that?
It was a pretty typical dormitory, and I always had to have a roommate. I remember sometimes roommates would like come one day and, you know, be gone a few days later, and I kept losing things. They'd steal things from me. I had this coat, which I still really miss. It was because my parents had been traveling in, I think it was Egypt or, you know, someplace in the Middle East, and they bought this. It's like a camel skin
Wow.
coat, and it had all these embroidered. in it. It was really pretty.
Wow.
Well, that disappeared with a roommate and stuff like that. But anyway, yeah, I was kind of on the, I was on the second floor, and the first floor was a TV set, but there was, at the time, the only TV station you could get was, it was, I think it was out of Flagstaff, and it, but it, but there was a repeater in, on Mount Bill Williams Mountain.
Okay.
And the repeater was the only thing that made it so you got, you could get anything from TV or radio at Grand Canyon.
Hmm, okay.
And of course, if there was a storm, especially a thunderstorm, it like, apparently, I never saw the thing, but I guess the repeater was just in a tin shack, you know, up on the mountain.
Right. And
it'd get hit by lightning, or something would happen every once in a while, and it would go out, and we wouldn't have any TV reception for several days, and until somebody went up the hill and fixed it.
Right, right.
Okay. Anyway, that was a far cry from all this, you know, microwave stuff we've got these days.
Yeah, and you know, hundreds of TV channels and all that stuff.
Exactly.
So you went to personnel. They said, okay, you're going to stay at Victor Hall. You're going to need to get over there. So I imagine you walked that big suitcase back over there.
Yeah.
And then Bright Angel Lodge, you're going to be a dishwasher there. What was the food situation like? How did that work out?
Oh, they had a employee cafeteria.
Okay.
It's probably still there as far as I know, on the way from the canyon side, the north side is supposed to be of the lodge. There's
mm-hmm.
some stair steps that go up to the employee dining room.
In the Bright Angel Lodge on the
Bright
kind
Angel
of
lodge.
East side away from the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yep, that's still there. Yep.
Yeah.
And then was that three meals a day?
Yeah, and it was, there was, it, my pay was $1.50 an hour.
Okay.
Plus room and board. So your paycheck wasn't much, but anyway, you got free room and board, which was okay, because, you know, what I discovered, or what, well, I knew would be the case anyway, but what was important to me was that I was on the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And I could, and so, you know, being there and having free access to the Grand Canyon, I mean, being able to walk down the trail anytime I want or go explore other trails or
mm-hmm.
all that stuff, that was the main thing. I didn't care about the fact that I wasn't making much money, but it's what I think separated me from most of the people that they would hire because they'd hire people and they'd only last until they got a paycheck and then they were gone.
Right, right.
And but I stayed the whole summer there. And my big idea was, because, of course, I'm fresh out of college and trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. And I decided that I kind of would like to get into the restaurant business.
Oh.
You know, and maybe someday even own a restaurant. And, you know, but I needed to know what all that involved, you know.
Yeah.
So all that they would give me was a job as a dishwasher, but at least I'd be, I have a foot in the door, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'd be in the kitchen.
Yep.
And
yep.
And I kept bugging the main chef was this guy named, this kind of Mexican guy named Gomez. He was the head of food and beverage, I guess. He must have been anyway. And I every time I'd see him, I'd say, "Chef, can I get a, you know, into some other parts of the kitchen? You know, I really would like to learn more about, you know, being about a restaurant." And I told him all this. So he'd go, he'd always call me young man. He'd go, "Yes, young man, I'll get you, you know." And he just kept ignoring, you know, not doing it.
Right.
And then it got to be October, and I went, "Okay, you said, that's what happened." In the middle of the summer, he went, "Oh, wait until October, and wait until the summer's over, and then we'll talk about it." And so I finally went, "Okay, it's October." I said, "I'm going to either quit, or you're going to have to give me a better job and a different job." And he said, "Well, okay." And he made me a kitchen steward, and not just a kitchen steward, but a night kitchen steward, which is means that I spent all night cleaning the kitchen and, you know, like running all, I had to take all of the vent covers, you know, which are all full of grease over the main line, and run them through the dishwasher and put them back up. And I had to roll up the rubber mats on the floor, you know, to keep people from slipping, right?
Yep.
Pull those up and load them onto a dolly and carry it, take them out to the there's kind of a, what'd you call it, a garage sort of thing at the end, and unroll them and spray them down with hot water and this really strong soap, you know, to get all this grease out of them.
Right.
Roll them back up and take those back out and, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, that was the job of the night steward. And I'm going, this isn't any better than being a dishwasher.
Yeah. Was that, no. Did you get a raise for that, or was that the same pay?
Same. No. All minimum wage.
Okay. Let's go back for just a minute. That summer, do you still remember how the dishwashing scene worked?
Oh yeah.
How'd that work?
It was there was a pot washer who had three sinks, I believe, and you know you wash them in one sink and you and then you rinse them in the second sink, and then the third sink was a bleach solution to kill all the germs. You know, that's how you wash that, pots and pans. And then the dishwasher was a machine that was about, maybe 10 feet long. And it had a conveyor belt sort of thing that went through it. And the conveyor belt was made of those tongued things that you can, like in a dishwasher, that you can put plates on and dishes and that sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And anyway, you run it, you throw, put the dirty ones on one side, and it had, you know, several stages that went through to clean the dishes, and on the other side, they came out really hot, you know, the dishes were, and you have to use gloves to grab them and stack them up and put them back in the you know, when you had a chance, you'd put them back in where the dishes go and all that stuff. So it was, I remember there were things that kind of held trays at an angle that you'd put glasses in.
Okay.
You put all the glasses in. And the thing that kept getting me is sometimes the bus people would throw so much stuff in a tub, you know, to bring it to the dishwasher.
Right.
And they'd throw so much stuff in it that they'd break the glasses.
Oh, wow.
And I wouldn't know that. So I would reach in to grab the glasses and cut my hand. And, you know, I remember cutting my hand quite a few times because of dishwasher, you know, of running into broken glass.
Did you ever decide to wear some food preparation handlers, cutters, gloves?
Yeah. I think, well, I can't remember if I did or not.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. And would that dishwasher break down?
It never did when we were there.
Okay, because I kind of wondered what they did when it did. There'd be a lot of hand washing going on.
Oh, my God, yeah, there would.
Yeah. And so over at the El Tovar, the three pot washing sinks over there, that's called the dish pit.
Oh, yeah?
Was the BA dishwashing area, did it have a nickname for it? Do you remember?
Not that I remember, no.
Okay, all right. And was there anyone else in there that was, like, you know, happy to be there?
It was a team. It took at least two people or three people. Well, three people, including the pot washer.
Right. And who else do you remember working with there? Do you remember?
Et cetera.
Do you remember who you were working with? Remember anybody else?
No, because none of them stayed for very long.
Got it.
Okay. I remember a guy, he was a day steward. His name was Woody, and he was really funny. He had a kind of, how would you describe it? Very sarcastic view of the world.
Okay.
But it was funny. It wasn't, you know, it was something you want to stay away from. It was just funny.
Okay.
Like, oh, for example, there was a presidential election in there in 72. I can't remember who was running, or Carter maybe. But anyway, I don't think I voted. I just heard about the fact that there was going to be an election because I heard that on the news. But, you know, I knew nothing about who was running or anything. But I brought that up to Woody. I said, "Hey, Woody, you going to vote in the election?" And he laughed. He said, "Why would I vote in a stupid election?" I said, "Well, you know, to find out, you know, to decide who's going to be president, for example." And he says, "I've been working here under three presidents, and it hasn't made one goddamn difference who was the president. My job was always exactly the same."
Interesting. Yeah. Huh.
So why should I vote?
Right.
Eric Gasa. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Eric Gasa was the shift manager. He was always behind the line, you know. He was over, you know, organizing all the plates to go out and that sort of thing.
So how do you spell Eric's last name?
What?
Yeah, how do you spell Eric's last name?
G-U-I, is it S-A?
Yeah.
Gasa?
Yeah, and we can probably look it up too. What do you remember about Eric?
Well, you know, I didn't have much contact with him really because he was over at the line and I was at the dishwasher. So
okay,
he would say hi every once in a while.
Okay,
but you know, he was busy doing other things.
Had he met Sue by then?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. And eventually they would move out to that piece of land south of the...
Yeah, before they'd done that.
Right,
that,
okay.
Sure.
All right. And he would have been close to your age.
Yeah, he probably was.
Okay. All right. So anything else about doing the dishes that you remember?
So So anyway, that story I was telling about being the night steward.
Right, kitchen steward.
Night kitchen steward. I did that for about a week, but I did that for a couple of weeks, I suppose. I just didn't like that being on the night duty because you get done right at 6 o'clock, 6 a.m., and then you originally go home and sleep, and then you had to be on duty by 10 o'clock that night, and that meant you couldn't hang out in the bar, you couldn't hang out with other people, and there was no social life, in other words.
Mm, okay.
The night, so I didn't like that.
Were you the only night steward? Was there a team to work with?
No, I was the only one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about nightlife for a little bit.
She has Eric's last name spelled here.
Oh, what do you got?
G-U-E-I-S-S.
A-Z.
A-Z.
Really? He says.
Okay. Huh. All right.
So, anyway, nightlife?
Yeah.
Bright
Angel Bar? I mean, where?
Bright Angel Bar, yeah. It was, there's the Bright Angel Bar and the El Tabar Bar.
Right.
And,
was there a difference in the prices of the drinks?
Possibly. I don't remember that.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, it was, you mostly hung out at the Bright Angel Bar, and it had booths, instead of tables like they did last time I saw it anyway, had booths along the wall, and a jukebox at the very end, and of course the bar was where it is now, and it was a pretty rowdy place because it was the only place for employees to go, and so that's where they were, and every once in a while a fight would break out, and the Rangers would come running in, and I remember one time there was a fight going on. I was at one end of the bar, and the only reason I knew there was a fight going on is that the jukebox kept skipping.
Oh.
Because they were, pounding somebody's head against the jukebox.
Oh, gee.
But then there was one time when the Rangers came in. Usually the fights were between the Cowboys and the Indians.
Okay.
The Rangers, the Wranglers, and the Native people that were, there were quite a number of them working there, of course. But anyway, one time that was happening, and the radio got stolen from one of the Rangers. And so that was a big deal. The radio was gone. Somebody had stolen a radio. Somebody had the radio.
Right.
Well, it turned out this was later, 1970. This was getting, maybe 73.
Okay.
I was, at that time, I'd gone to it. They had a party at the employee dining room. So we'd been at this party, and they had a keg, I guess. I don't know what, but we were drinking, I know. And I had a roommate named Dean Zaharias. And
how do you spell Dean's last name?
Zaharias. And how to spell it, I can only guess.
Zaharias?
Okay.
So Dean was your roommate, and they had a keg going.
And unbeknownst to me, Dean had contact with the guy that had that radio.
Okay.
And he had contact with another guy who was one of, I think it was Steve Verkamp. Not Steve. Steve's the judge.
Right.
It was one of the Verkamps, anyway, who wanted the radio and was willing to pay for it.
Oh.
And so this guy, so Dean, my roommate, arranged a meeting between this guy and the guy that had the radio and the guy that wanted the radio in the El Tovar parking lot at like 10 o'clock at night or something like that. Well, it turned out that the Verkamp's guy, and his name I don't know, and I don't want to guess, so...
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the Verkamp's guy was informing, and informed to Ernie Kunzel.
Okay.
A name that, an infamous name of the history... that part of the history of Grand Canyon, because he was, I could go into Ernie Kunzel stories forever.
Well, that's good, because I'll want some Ernie Kunzel stories.
Okay.
And I think that's spelled K-U-N-C-L?
I don't know how he spelled his name.
Okay.
But
before we do Ernie,
okay,
you've left us, you're at a night steward.
Okay.
And it's been a couple of weeks, and you're like, this is not going to work. And Gomez is probably laughing. Okay, well, he didn't want to be in doing dishes, so I'll make him a night steward.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Huh? Okay. Then I quit. And that gave me, I had a week before I had to get out. And I'd never been... You know, I've only had one day off at a time, and so I'd never been to the North Rim. So, but it was October, so
right.
It was late October. So by this time, the North Rim had closed.
Ooh.
And I hiked down and spent a night at Bright Angel Campground, which was at the time it was just a big flat area on the west side of the creek that had a bunch of big cottonwood trees growing on it.
And this is in the fall of 1972.
Right.
Okay.
And then I hiked on up the North Kaibab on up to Roaring Springs, and there was a campground at Roaring Springs, so I camped there. That was a cool campground. It's too bad that closed because I just loved that one. It was it was on the side of Bright Angel, or what would that be? Not Bright Angel Canyon, but Roaring Springs Canyon. It was on the side of Roaring Springs Canyon. Wait a minute. Can you guys? It was on the side of Roaring Springs Canyon that Roaring Springs is on.
Okay.
So there were little rivulets of water coming down from Roaring Springs.
Yep.
On one side and the other and the camping was just kind of a big flat terrace wasn't a very big terrace actually on that side of the canyon. And I camped there, and I had two nights there. So I camped the one night, and then I just left everything at the campground and hiked up, you know, just a day hike up to the North Rim.
Uh huh.
And it was cloudy and cool, and when I got to the top, it started snowing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then I found my way, you know, out to the, I knew which way was the point, you know, so I walked that way and found the road, and all the
Okay.
But it was snowing, and there's maybe an inch or 2 inches of snow. And, you know, it's the first snow probably was on all of the roofs of all the buildings. So.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful, and I finally got out to the north rim to the lodge, and I think I had lunch on the steps that go up to the saloon.
Okay.
And then walked around the building, and to look at the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And you could only see about 10 feet because it was
right.
So I never did see the south rim from the north rim that day. And then I hiked back.
Okay. Did you borrow a backpack? I mean, how did you manage that? Did you still have your green pack?
Backpack. I don't know. How did I get that? I probably got that on my days off when I was working as a dishwasher. I'd only get one day off, so I'd get up early and usually take the Navajope bus into Flag.
Yep.
And often, though, I was hitchhiking, too. I remember doing that quite often.
Okay.
Hitchhiking there or hitchhiking back. And anyway, I think I must have gone to town and found a place where I could buy a backpack.
Okay.
It was a pretty, it was metal and metal frame.
Like aluminum?
Orange backpack, I remember that. But I had I'd gotten this sleeping bag, which was, God, who knows what, Army Surplus or something. It was made out of wool, I think. It was really heavy, and you just kind of rolled it up and rolled it and took a rope and
tied it up
and then throw the rope over my shoulder, and that's how I carry. I had a backpack and a sleeping bag that I had to carry on my shoulder.
Okay, and that was probably typical camping gear for the day.
It was, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, it was. You know, I didn't have all that much money, so I couldn't.
Did you, when you went through Phantom Ranch, did you meet any of the employees or the rangers, Park Service people that were working there?
Yeah, I did. The employees at Phantom Ranch, not the rangers. Well, okay. Yeah, I did meet Phil Hecker. He was the ranger there. He was real cowboy, you know, and he would ride his horse over to Clear Creek and back every once in a while.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was pretty amazing, especially if you remember that trail that Clear Creek has, all that part where it's just like scree slope that it goes across.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being on a horse doing that, but you do it.
And Phil's last name is something like...
Oh, is it H-E-C-K-E-R?
Okay, great. There was another guy who was eventually there named Bob Cornelius.
Right.
Does that ring a bell?
Yes, it does. That was Corny, is what they called him down there. But he was there just before I started working at Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
And I didn't really ever, I don't remember ever meeting him. But,
okay.
Yeah, he was involved with the swimming pool and
right.
And threw a bunch of stuff in the hole that the swimming pool used to be in, you know, that he and I have had some since then have had some I said the words are between him and me, because I wrote some articles which were about the swimming pool, And I quoted some of the employees that were down there at the time as far as, the, you know, how the swimming pool was, or the end of the swimming pool, the demise of the swimming pool, I guess.
Right.
And I just wrote down what people said, but, and I, this was in an article that was in the 1990s, I think, but it was, but anyway, somehow Bob Cornelius found this article just recently, just in the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't like it. He didn't like the, what it said, and so he wrote an article back for the Historical Society, which...
Right, I remember that. There was a recent rebuttal that he was sort of his side of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's good. That's history. Always, everybody gets to, you know, their view of the elephant.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly. But some people kind of change history so it's nicer for, you know, what they did than the way it was, it really was.
Right.
In my opinion.
Well, that's why you have to try to search out as many sides of the story as you can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So in 1962, you hiked over to the North Rim in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
Was the house at Roaring Springs, had that been built yet?
You mean the powerhouse?
Where the Aikens would eventually live.
Yeah, that was there.
Okay. And were they there yet?
No.
Not quite. Okay.
No, that was soon after, not very long after. I was probably 75, maybe. I don't know. I'm sure you've got interviews with them.
I haven't talked to them yet. That's pending. So that's all right. But I did talk to Kurt Sauer, who was his first seasonal job at Grand Canyon was the Cottonwood Ranger.
Uh-huh.
And he that's in 78, I think.
Yeah, well, I remember when he moved in, when the Aikens, you know, moved in there.
Okay.
And it was, Bruce and he had a really good friend who was also from Massachusetts, who was also a ranger that also moved there at the same time. But I can't remember their names.
Okay. So you hiked to the North Rim. What was your overall plan? It's like, all right, I quit. I'm going to hike to North Rim, but what else were you thinking you were going to do?
Oh, well, then I went back to Oklahoma.
Oh.
I went back to Oklahoma and tried looking for a job again. And I also had cataracts at the time, so I had to have cataract operation.
Okay, did that help your vision?
My parents were still living in Oklahoma, so...
Keith?
Yeah?
Did that cataract surgery operation, did that help your vision? Okay. All right.
Yeah. I don't think so. Let's see. Before, well, it was, you know, it was back when they didn't replace your, a cataract operation back then was they took your natural lens out of your eye. That's basically what it was.
Okay.
And they didn't put another lens in. The technology for doing that was around, but they didn't know how long it would last, so they weren't installing artificial lenses to people who were young. So I was still pretty young, so I mean, considering that. So
they just removed your lens.
They just removed my lens, which meant that I had to wear really thick glasses.
I was going to say that wouldn't have helped your vision.
It just kept it from getting worse.
Okay.
But, you know, so I wore, instead of having an artificial, my real lens, I had glass, really thick glasses.
Okay.
And so, yeah, and I had really thick glasses, and then I had a, they called it a loop, a little magnifier that hooked to the frame of my glasses.
Oh.
And I could swing it down in front of my eyes to read.
Okay.
So that, you know, not having a lens, you don't have the ability to
right.
focus. So, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, so I was, from then on, I was wearing very thick glasses all the time.
Right. Okay, so you're back in Oklahoma for the winter of 72-73.
Mm-hmm. And then I didn't get a job, so I called them up at, you know, Grand Canyon again, and they said, oh, yeah, we'll rehire you. You've got to rehire. And so I went back. I don't remember going back. I mean, how that went.
Okay. In the spring of 73?
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder, I mean, no way of knowing, but it's possible that, I mean, they would have been cutting back staff in the fall of 72.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's possible that you got moved into the night steward job as a way to get you to go.
Yeah, I think that was probably true. It was probably something like that. You know, I'm trying to think. I think that's the year, come to think of it, I think that's the year I hitchhiked from the Grand Canyon. Could it have been that year or the next year? Anyway, I hitchhiked from the Grand Canyon over to Los Angeles.
Wow.
And then from Los Angeles north, I hitchhiked all the way up to Washington State. And I was I met a girlfriend that I'd made while I was living on the South Rim, and she and I then took the bus up. We were gonna meet another person, another friend. Up in Canada, just north of the Canadian border.
Hmm.
This might have, I'm not sure which year this was.
But okay.
Anyway, we were going to do that, and so I met her, and she was living with her folks in just outside of Seattle, Washington, and I met her there, and then we went north together up into Washington, up through Washington to the Canadian border, and we were going to go across to this party, and I remember calling them tell them we're coming, and they went, oh, you got to, we've got this really good dope. The Peace Gate there, where you go across into Canada.
Okay.
And I remember I had a radio somehow, and the radio, the story was that like more than 50% of people under the age of 20 had tried marijuana.
Okay.
And that was a big story. So. Anyway, so I got to the gate, and what do they do? Because we're walking, because we weren't in the bus, the bus took us to that Blair or something, the very northern part. Washington.
Okay.
And I was hoping that they would take me right to the border, take us right to the border, and we could just get off the bus and walk across the border, or even go through the border. But no, the bus station was a ways from the border, so we walked up to the border, and of course, all of the cars that were coming, you know, it was the extension of I-5, you know, it wasn't called I-5 then, but anyway, people were in cars. They just drive up, and there was a booth, of course, and they'd ask them some question, who knows what, and they'd go, you know, just wave them on through. So,
right.
But no, we were walking. So they took us and they separated us so that they could make sure our stories matched. And so I went one way and my girlfriend went the other way. And so I'm in this booth, and in this office with this, you know, guy who might have been left over from the Nazis, I'm not sure.
Hmm.
But he's like trying to catch me on something, you know, and he asked a question, and this was probably the biggest mistake I've ever made in my whole life. He says, well, have you ever tried marijuana? And I'm thinking of this story, and I'm saying, you know, oh, it's cool, you know. And I said, yes. Oh, yeah, so where did you try it? And so I was like, okay, to make up a story here. I was in Los Angeles, and it was like years ago. And so, well, was it illegal then? Well, yeah, but... And you know, I just tried it. I didn't like it. I never smoked it since. And he concludes the interview by saying, well, since you broke the law in California several years ago by smoking marijuana, we're not going to let you in to Canada.
Yeah.
And, of course, my girlfriend was smart enough to say no
okay.
to that question. But we couldn't go in. So that was as far north as I could go that
time. Oh, wow. Huh.
You know, and we headed back south.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So you toured around a little bit then.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, you know, it's like, all right, I'm going to have to go back to work here somewhere.
Yeah. Well, right. Well, I had a job at the Canyon. I just had to wait until March or so.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine these days they don't even lay people off in the wintertime.
They do. Oh, yeah. No, they do, because visitation goes up and down. And
they
so it,
do?
Yeah, it gets hard. In the winter,
okay.
You know, visitation drops, and so that, yeah.
Okay.
So in 73, when you came back, was it back to washing dishes at BA?
No, I got a job in housekeeping.
Ah.
And at the El Tavar.
Okay.
So, okay, well, I got a job at housekeeping, but it was all over the place. Because I remember for a long time I was at Yavapai, and I did that in 73 and in 74. I was in housekeeping on the South Rim, and, there was... I remember, you know... being at Yavapai, I remember doing rooms at Bright Angel, and I remember doing rooms even at Maswick, as I recall, and then at Bright Angel, too. probably made every room on the south rim.
Okay.
Made it up at one time or another.
Keith, you know, we've been going for not quite an hour, but getting close here. Maybe this is a good place to tie up part two, and then part three, we'll talk about what it was like to be a general room attendant, a GRA, in 1973.
Okay.
And then I can ask Ernie Kunzel stories.
Okay.
And we'll go from there. Is there anything else you want to add to 1972?
Because I got to explore the Grand Canyon was probably, that was the reason I kept coming back to work there. I mean, it definitely wasn't the job, and it wasn't the pay.
Right.
It was being at the Grand Canyon.
And it seemed like mostly on your days off, I mean, if you needed something, you spent that whole day just getting to Flagstaff and coming back on your one day off. Did you get a chance to, like, hike, the Hermit Trail at all, or the Tanner? Or...
I would hike every trail as far as you can do in a day.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I did all those trails. Of course, it was easier for me to do the, And then once I got into housekeeping, I was getting 2 days off a week.
Oh.
Then I could go further down and explore things. That's when the first time I got down to Phantom Ranch. But the unmaintained trails were hard for me because of my vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the hardest time finding them. You know, they'd always, I'd walk them for a while and they'd be pretty good near the top. But as you got further down, they slowly got to be, look more like a rabbit track or something than a real trail. So I would lose the trails.
Okay.
Quite often, so.
Did you have walking sticks then? Were you using those just for balance aid?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
All right. But it would be hard because of your vision to follow the trail.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yes. I slipped and fell a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I would think you'd be really well versed in fall survival.
I was. In fact, one time, much later, I had a woman who was, I can't remember exactly what her job was, but somehow she was in charge. She was an expert on hiking for people with low vision she and I hiked down the Kaibab, I think, for a ways and back up, and she was telling me how amazed she was that I'd learned how to fall so well.
Wow. Yeah.
But, because I've never broken anything as far as hiking goes anyway.
Good. Yeah. Oh, that's good. All right. Well, let's we'll wrap this up and we'll come back to being a room attendant in 1973.
Oh, I remember. I know a story.
Yeah.
I don't remember what year that was, though, but I was, I had a bicycle on the South Rim, and I remember one time I rode it. Well, I rode it quite often out to Hermit's Rest.
Okay.
And back. And anyway, I was coming back one time, and I came back. I came down a hill, that last hill.
That last big, steep, long hill.
We overlooked.
Yep.
And you just get going so fast that your bike is almost shaking, because it's moving so fast. But anyway, I got down the hill, and turned and went across the tracks, and then I was in the clinic.
Oh, my.
And I couldn't, I didn't, I don't, still don't remember that accident, but apparently I ran into some woman who was walking along the road, and she got up. I was laying unconscious on my bike, or from my bike, or I don't know, I was laying unconscious on the road. She got up and ran off into the woods, never to be seen again.
Wow.
And I have no idea, maybe she was illegal, or I don't know what the deal was. But anyway, somebody came along and called the Rangers, and they picked me up and took me to the clinic, and I woke up there and ended up having to come to Flagstaff. It was back when the, what do they call that part of the hospital now, the annex? It used to be the hospital, the only hospital in Flagstaff.
Oh, okay, in Flag.
I had a broken collarbone.
Oh, wow.
And they fixed that, or they, anyway, set that, and I had to spend the night there, though. I don't remember why, but anyway.
Okay. All right, well, let's call it there.
Okay.
And we'll pick it up again. So this will conclude part two, Oral History with Keith and Nancy Green. Today is Thursday, November 19th, 2020. My name is Tom Martin, and Keith, thank you so very much.
Okay. Okay, next time, are we going to need Nancy?
Yeah, hang on a second.